Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio. Well, hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. Today is the last day of the year, Friday, December 31st, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. However, the first hour is going to be pre-recorded. Dr. Tim is on vacation this week. And we played, if you haven't listened to them, on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we played pre-recorded shows on how the 12-step in AA is very similar to the forgiveness work. And we had different guests on each of those 3 days. And then yesterday we played the first century Aramaic forgiveness. And today we're doing Why Mind Shifters. And so enjoy this one. And then Michael and I will be back with you live at 1 o'clock.
Thank you, dear heart. And welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here. And certainly appreciative of the fact that we get to have this conversation. Open this conversation one more time about the first century Aramaic forgiveness process and all of the correlated tools. Yesterday we talked about mind shifters, and I don't think we actually opened the lines for anybody who wanted to get a mind shifter, Jeannie. We did talk about using that one each time I open, face, and heal another issue in my life. Even though it may be physically, mentally, and or emotionally painful, I take one more step into vitality and eternal life. So if anybody worked on that mind shifter, it'd be awesome to hear how it impacted you, what happened as you wrote about that. And to use the mind shifter, you know, you take the thought that is the mind shifter, you put it on the left side of the page, you draw a line down the middle of the page, divide it in two, and you use the mind shifter as a catalyst to resonate whatever's in your mind, and then dump it on the right-hand side so you have a record. And so that's the focal point of a mind shifter. And so if you'd like to get a mind shifter, specifically related to the sheet we were talking about yesterday, we'll ask you to get it out. And again, you pick two numbers, one from the grouping 1 to 3, first number that pops into your head from 1 to 3, and then a second number from 1 to 13. I always use that. I've used that for, I don't know, 4 decades now working with people, so that I bypass, you know, my intellect, their intellect, and trying to figure out, oh, what should I work on here, and ask for guidance. And it's actually quite hilarious, especially in intensive, where a number of people are gathered who've been working together for, you know, a week or 2 weeks maybe. And then we do a mind shifters and still point breathing process. Each time in an intensive we do the still point process, we start it out, or, you know, we assign a mind shifter and get people to do some writing to stir things up. And so if it stirred anything up for you, it'd be interesting to hear what your process was if you worked on, if you wrote that mind shifter yesterday, and or if you want to push one and get a custom mind shifter, just push one. Jeannie will answer and will ask you for your two numbers from 1 to 3, from 1 to 13. So you've got two separate numbers. And that will key you into a specific mind shifter, which she will give you. So if you have anything to share, push one. Let's talk about it. And or
Michael,
anything on your mind at all in regard to these awesome tools. Mind shifter, still point breathing, forgiveness, responsibility, communication, commitment. You know, there's a list of so many tools. Each different workshop addresses a different aspect of the healing process. And so if you're out there in this land, Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
There are no hands up. However, yesterday we didn't have time to get to her because we were having a pretty detailed conversation with a new young man who had just called into the show.
Yes,
however,
awesome, wasn't it?
Julie had texted MindShifter 1-1, and that one is, and I think that you've reworded it, but it says, I deserve love just because the breath of life was put into me. So I don't know if you want to reword that somehow. I am love because the breath of life.
Yeah, I deserve to experience myself as love, as opposed to, you know, the kinds of conversations we talked about yesterday that replicate what messages we've been given by a power person. So that would be a rewrite of that. Actually, I do need to go in and edit the sheet before we send them out for the workshop this weekend. For there are a few edits for me to make there. So if you wrote that MindShifter yesterday,
we'll have to let them know that you're resending because I have already sent the list to the people that had signed up.
So, right. Well,
I've already, and if you have signed up and you haven't gotten or found the email from me, I have sent you the first two videos, the MindShifter's and Introduction to Stillpoint Breathing, and then also an hour and some close to 2 hour video from our August intensive on MindShifter's, and then I sent you the MindShifter list and asked you to pick two numbers and text me or email me. And let me know what your two numbers are because you need to be looking at doing your MindShifter. Of course, I sent you the list so you can look it up yourself, but I have sent that out plus the Zoom links to everybody who has signed up for Saturday. And we might want to mention for those who are listening what we're talking about for Saturday.
Well, we're doing a MindShifters and Stillpoint Breathing workshop on Saturday. And if anyone would like to join us, it'll actually start at 10 in the morning Eastern time and go until 5 o'clock, and then it will continue. We'll give people a little bit of an intermission and keep working on whatever surfaces and such. And then on Wednesday evening, part of the workshop Saturday, we'll do a second session. It'll be question and answers and processing time, so strictly for the people who attend the MindShifters and Stillpoint Breathing Workshop. So if you want to participate in that, you could drop Jeannie a note at jeannie@whyagain.org and give her your phone number, and I'll get back to you, and we'll confirm your participation if you want to join us. And or if you want to join, we have as a result of the MindShifters and Stillpoint Breathing Workshop we did last month, we've decided that each month from here on in, we're going to do a monthly MindShifters and Stillpoint Breathing. It'll be the second Saturday of each month and the Wednesday following that Saturday. So each month there'll be two sessions, and it's going to be done kind of like a membership, a club, what have you, where people can, you know, join and just do one session. Or you can do a package of 3 months of sessions, and they don't have to be consecutive months. Or you can do a full year membership. And that full year membership doesn't mean you have to do every month for that year. If you give us some advance notice and, you know, let's say, well, November, I can't make that session. I've already got, you know, my Thanksgiving party planned or what have you, then, you know, we'll skip that one and it'll just tack on to the end so that it can be somewhat movable. If people commit to the year and there's a particular session that they can't attend, so you'll get those full 12 sessions. And so if you want to join us, and, you know, cost-wise, if you're doing one session, and this includes two videos on the MindShifters workshop, actually the one from our catalog that as a DVD we used to sell for $40 will be included in that, and a video from the intensive on the MindShifter topic. that'll be Mind Shifters and Introduction to Still Point Breathing, and then the Mind Shifters process from one of the intensives. So those two videos will be included, and you'll receive, after the workshop, it'll be done on Zoom online, you'll receive a link to, a permanent link, to the video of that workshop that particular day. So you can always go back and review what happened and tap in and look at the instructions that were given and all of that sort of thing. As well as, so there'll be a total of four videos included in that session, the Wednesday evening follow-up. So all of that's included in the cost. If you're doing just 1 week, is $150, includes all four videos. If you want to do a three-month package, you want to sign up for 3 months, and you can place those. You know, you can do one this month and wait 2 months and do another, and wait 3 months and do another, whatever. Then the cost for the 3 months is $300 instead of $450.
No, it's $370. Michael, it's $375.
Pardon me. Oh, excuse me. You got me. Pardon me. I don't have the sheet in front of me. And then the yearly membership is $1,200, and if it's paid in advance, then it's $900. So we're going to deduct $300 off of that. So $75 a month for a year, and you're part of an ongoing educational process, particularly geared, although I'm sure that won't be the only thing we'll address, but particularly geared to how to utilize the Still Point Breathing process and becoming really well acquainted with the Mind Shifters process. So that'll be a full year educational process if anybody wants to play. Drop Jeannie a note at J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. And or if you've got my number, you're certainly welcome to text me or call me. We'll have a conversation about it and get you set up to come play. Some long-term students of the work are participating, and the things that open up when you get the hem of the garment, you know, we were talking about the hem of the garment principle the other day, working together in a community setting like that toward the same goal, the things that happen are quite monumental, quite profound. So, and Jeannie, the Mind Shifter that Julie happened to pick yesterday actually fits perfectly with our reading for today, which is from page 123 in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? If you're new to the show, we're working our way through my book a few paragraphs at a time. And if you want to follow along, unfortunately, the book's out of print, but you can go to Amazon or eBay, and they have lots of used copies for sale, usually pretty inexpensively, almost embarrassingly inexpensive. And then we've also, if you want to go to our website, you can download the book free, actually in English and German and Russian and Spanish and Farsi and Danish, and I'm not even sure what other languages. There is a Swedish copy of the book, but the Swedish publisher didn't want to put the book online free, so they wouldn't let us do that. Unfortunately, we've been efforting getting the copyright back. It was supposed to default back to us, and we've been having some difficulties. The company seems to have that published it originally seems to have disappeared, and so we've had some challenges in being able to get that, because we'd like to take it and put it online so it's also available free. In any event, that's kind of a taste of what's happening. And in the book, on page 123, we're about the middle of the page. We've been talking to Richard about love and the direct experience of love. And he's been asking for a definition of love. And I reply to him, I don't have one. I do know a way to experience it, or what will tell you when love is present. Well, Richard says, what are the signals that tell you love is present? First, the mind that holds the condition of love in the ancient Aramaic, perfect love, is peaceful and patient in all circumstances. This mind takes responsibility for any disturbance it has, and therefore heals itself quickly and creates a space of healing for others. additional fruit of the mind of love includes a tenderness, compassion, and gentleness. So when a mind is present, when love is present in a mind, there's going to be that state of serenity, tenderness, compassion, gentleness. A mind that proclaims it punishes and brandishes fear and the name of love is either deceiving or is a deceived mind. No such fruit possible from love. We hear people talking about, you know, this overwhelmingly powerful being called love that created an insanely threatening place for us to burn and suffer. And that's just part of the fear-based mind's misunderstanding of the original language and the original meaning of the words in the Aramaic scriptures. If you go to the word hell in Aramaic, it's actually the Gehenna, the fiery place. It was basically a dump outside of the city of Jerusalem. I understand that today the Gehenna is actually a place of very high-end condos now. The dump is gone, and it's now valuable property. But, you know, basically it was the fiery place, the Gehenna. It was the garbage dump. It was where, you know, if people didn't have the funding to be properly buried, they took their bodies to the Gehenna to be burned. And it was where garbage was dumped. It was smelly. It was nasty. It was hellfire and brimstone. And they used that as a threat with little kids. You don't be good, I'll take you to the Gehenna. And it worked pretty well. So they created one for big people. But if you think a mind called love is capable of that, well, then you haven't experienced a mind called love. It just is not in your canon, I guess. And it's time for that experience. That makes sense out of a lot of senselessness I've seen, Richard sighed. What do you mean when you say you had a way to experience love? We could call this an experiential definition. Love is what you experience after you use the process of true forgiveness. Yeah. It is what is left when the mind's realities get out of the way. Now, if I tell you that, and you believe it, we'll have another belief system in the world, another belief system that people will fight over and defend. If you use the tools and have a personally experienced, is there anything to fight over? No. Only the insecure who don't know what love is have to force and fight over their BS, their belief system. Only the insecure need to have everyone believe the same way they do so their beliefs will not be challenged. Key thought here, an experiential definition of love, what you experienced just after true forgiveness. Richard, each of us was created in and as a state of love, and that's such an important thought. Created in and as a state of love. And we deserve to experience that state 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If we're not experiencing it, something is out of place. When we withhold love from another, it is we who suffer from the withdrawal of that love. It is we who experience the lack of love. Remember what you knew as a child about the way the world was supposed to operate? My function in the world is to deliver tools to people and point them toward the result possible with the use of the tools. My goal is to inspire you to use the tools and then arrive at your own conclusions about life. Of course, I think when the evidence is in, this work will prove itself correct, but the world does not need another belief system. It needs the experience of love. So you remember back in our reading earlier as we talked to Richard about this. Richard was kind of lost in this state where one moment he'd have clarity and he'd feel connected, and the next moment he'd be in confusion. And we pointed out that the tools, as you use them, will uncover the confusion that needs to be healed. If you take a moment and just allow yourself to close your eyes for a minute, take a deep breath, and remember a moment, or allow yourself to imagine a moment where you are holding a newborn child. So just take a moment, breathe, let your mind go. And if you don't have the experience of holding a newborn, let me loan you mine. Actually, let me loan you two. I have two children. I have the privilege of getting to catch them myself as they were born. And I can remember the overwhelming intensity of the experience when my firstborn came out. It was actually brought some significant fear up in me. And it's something that I've worked on and had to process through. But then it moved into the space of holding such a precious presence. And I can remember the moment of doing that and thinking to myself, if somebody doesn't do something, and in this context, my thinking was something about the state of the world, there's not going to be a place for this precious little one to grow up. And that's the thought, as that went through my head, is what inspired me to commit to doing this work on a whole new level, making it available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And then the second experience, as my daughter was born, her head delivered. And, you know, they tell you that a child can't focus their eyes, a newborn, for the first several days. My daughter opened her eyes and laser looked me right square in the eye, and she grinned during her birth. And I'll tell you that sent me literally into that direct experience of love in a way I had only, what should I say, very briefly tasted previous to that point. Actually, the weekend she was born, I lived in Atlanta at that point. We had a classroom in our home, and it was a weekend. I did weekend workshops, and I had a weekend set up for Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, and along about 2:40 in the afternoon, realized that my wife was in labor. And I had a class starting at 7. There was one person I remember coming from Miami, and I, that was before cell phones, that was 40 years ago now. And so couldn't call and say, hey, we're canceling the class. The baby, the labor, once we realized she was actually in full labor, the baby was born within an hour. 4:40 was her birth time. And at 7 o'clock, 10-pound Krista Joy, we actually hadn't named her until in the process of the birth, and it just became really clear, and she informed us what her name was. So, you know, 4:40, she's born, and 2 hours and 20 minutes later, I've got her on one arm and I'm answering the door as people are coming in to do the class, and they're like, no, she wasn't just born 2.5 hours ago. It's like, yes, she was. And I went down to the classroom, started to teach, and here's the impact that that presence of love had on me, is I could not think a thought. I was, you've heard me say many times, you know, the real need that we have in healing is to be out of our minds, is to free ourselves from the grip of the perceptual constructs of our minds. Well, I was out of my mind. I could not think a thought with what I called my mind. And the teaching that I did, I actually, after the first few minutes, I don't remember exactly, but the first few minutes of that class, I stopped the class, I excused myself, I went up and got a tape recorder and recorded the rest of it. I lament that I have no idea where that recording is today, but I had to record it because I couldn't think of thought. The only way I've been able to describe what being in that experience of the pure presence of love, and my take is that her being so conscious and the transfer of energy, the resonance between she and I, when she opened her eyes and looked at me, opened that state of love full blown inside of me. And I had no mind. I had no mental function. That's a taste of what love is. And I could start coming up with a list of descriptors, the joy, the excitement, the sweetness, the beauty, endless. So what is love? The experience of definition comes when you go back to the moment where you first held a newborn. Now, in our Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, which many of you have been in, you've been there when Jeannie or I asked the question, take a moment. Have you ever held a newborn? If so, go back and remember holding that newborn once again and tap into the essence of the newborn. Everybody's description of that newborn, the words they used to speak about it, is some variation on the theme of love. Now, when you go back and remember that, ask yourself the question, is the newborn loving me or is the newborn love? Pretty much instantly becomes clear that the newborn is not loving, that the newborn is love. And they are such radically different states that we need to clean up our definition of love, because if you think love is something you can do, you'll keep trying to do something you can't do. You can't do love. It's not possible. This is the principle that needs to be clarified, and I think it's one of the most important misunderstandings. You know, if you listen to Vladimir Lenin, here's a man who's responsible probably for more deaths of humans in all of history than any other human. And here's what he said. If you want to destroy a culture, change the meaning of its words. You notice that virtually everyone came into a world as the presence of love, and then they were lied to. They were told that love was something that you did or that was done to you, or that if you were a good person would be done to you, or that you would get from somebody else, or that you would give to somebody else. And all of that is a fraud. And if you get caught in the fraud, then your mind doesn't know what to do. And the result is confusion. How many times have we heard people in relationships and the whole game for them is about confusion? If you don't get clarity on who you are, if you're not living from who you are, then you're living from some kind of mental construct about love that becomes, oh, God, self-sacrifice, sexual athletics, all kinds of crazy definitions. Now, the really bad news that comes with this is that nobody has ever loved you. Nobody is ever going to love you. You have never loved anyone. And you are never going to love anyone, and God does not love you. All of that is a fraud, period. Are the presence of love. Love isn't something you're going to get from somebody else or that somebody else is going to do to you. Now, notice that what people think they are is really important. Like if somebody thinks of themselves, you get the little kid who starts out as love, and they're told because one day they, you know, I mean, they were two and they did something, and somebody looked at them and said, oh, you did that. They didn't do that at all. It happened. The child participated. The child didn't say, I think I'm going to do this terrible, bad thing. But the adult standing by told them that they were the kind of person who does terrible, bad things. And the child who holds the belief that they are bad will tend to act badly because that's what they think they are. If you don't know who you are, then you will act out of who you think you are. And if you've been told the lies of the world that you're not good enough, you're broken, you'll never be good enough, your sister or your brother or your is better than you, or the thousand lies that come along that form a false identity for us as humans. If you don't ever discover and function as you are, then you will never function as love. You'll function out of your BS. By the way, that's a belief system. If you have a different set of initials for that, if you have a different reality in your mind, notice that, you know, somebody who holds one reality for his initials, BS, thinks and acts one way. You know, if I say to somebody, you're full of BS, and they think of it in the world's BS terms, they, well, how dare you say that about me? Whereas if that person knows that what I'm saying is you're functioning out of a belief system, they might be inspired to look into their belief systems and perhaps dismantle or forgive a false belief system. Can't function out of who you are if you haven't had the experience of who you are and you don't know who you are. And you are the created essence of love, period. Most of us came into a family system that as quickly as possible, often in the name of love, I mean, how many have ever heard that? I'm only hitting you because I love you and it hurts me more than it hurts you. I remember being fed that line and you know, the one who hit me, they weren't crying, they weren't wailing, they weren't in pain. It wasn't hurting them more than it hurt me. It's just such a crock that we've been fed. And it's time to stop eating that crock. And it's time to start knowing the truth. You and I and every human being, yes, even the person who you call the enemy, is literally made of the energy called love. That's their substance. They were made in the image and likeness of a creator called love, and that's who they are. And they won't function out of that until they know that. If they have a mental construct that there's something less, there's something worse, there's something broken, there's something wrong with them, then they'll function as someone worse, broken, and something's wrong with them. Until that idea is confronted, that lie is forgiven. So people are brought into the world. They have the experience of love knocked out of them, sometimes with a fist, unfortunately. And then they're told, they're sent out into the world with the command that says, now, go find somebody to love you. Or, go find somebody to love. And the command is false. It's a lie. We're given a command that can't be fulfilled. Person will never experience until they correct their minds. Remember, Paul talks about be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Until they correct their minds, they won't be able to find themselves as love, won't be able to experience themselves. And trying to function out of those insane power person messages, unconsciously motivated by them, leads to such trauma, such insanity, that it's beyond belief. So our purpose in being here is one, to learn ourselves to be the state of conscious, active, present love, to extend the energetic experience of that state to others, And when I'm talking about others, at this moment I'm talking about you. And it doesn't matter where you are. On the level where energy moves or radiates from the truth of who we are as love, all matter is transparent. And so it doesn't matter if you're in Australia, Bob, holding you in our hearts if you're with us today. If you're in Sweden, Peter, holding you in our hearts if you're with us. Tipia, if you're there in Thailand. Or if you're just down the block here from us in Bristol, Tennessee, we extend that energetic dynamic, that presence to you. And here's what we know, is that each individual who realizes who they are and chooses out of love by doing so sets up a literal high energy wave, an actual energy field that, and you remember yesterday we were talking about resonance, that through resonance resonates the state of being in anyone they touch or think of. Hence the line in the worksheet that says, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. And when you realize that's who you are, you begin to free yourself from the grip of the physiologically implanted, reinforced by pain and trauma, ideas about yourself that are false. Story comes to mind back in the early days when we were doing Laws of Living. My partner, Dan McDougall, bless him, he's now passed. It was he and I that together created the course called Laws of Living. He had actually created it for the prison system, a thing called Emotional Maturity Instruction. I was doing a thing called Lessons in Living. We put our work together. We had been traveling parallel paths with the Aramaic. We put our work together and created Laws of Living. And I remember Dan, you know, he did a lot of his work. He was an attorney. He actually was asked by a Superior Court judge in Albany, Georgia, course for the prison system. Emotional Maturity Instruction is what he created. And he was working actually in the federal penitentiary in Atlanta. Judge Kelly had previously been the in charge of the prison systems throughout the whole state of Georgia. Kelly was an amazing, I mean, as close to a saint as you could imagine. I mean, Kelly, as a judge, sentenced, God only knows how many people, to eons and eons and eons of time in prisons. But it was interesting, Judge Kelly, functioning as love, from love, never punished one person. He never in an angry time. I mean, Georgia's, you know, there's a lot of backwoods Georgia going on. You go down to Albany, it's some pretty rough stuff here, there. And he had some heinous criminals come before him. But he would hold the space and be the space of love for them. And he would say when he was sent to, you know, see my, some heinous crime. And, you know, he would say to this person, you know, I love you like a brother, sister. But you're not safe in the community, and the community has built a building with bars around it to isolate you from the community. And they asked me to decide who's safe in the community and who isn't, and you're not. So I'm going to sentence you to life behind bars. And I hold that space of love for you. I hold that you experience yourself as who you are, and I'll even sentence you to Laws of Living. One day in the federal penitentiary in Atlanta, one day, actually this was over a period of months, he went into the penitentiary and the word got around as to what he was doing, and there were some people who really didn't like what he was doing, teaching people about the truth and how to experience themselves and function as love. And someone in the prison system put a hit out on him. There was one guy who had come to Laws of Living who was in there for life. And I don't remember now exactly how many, but while he was in prison, he murdered several more times, three or four times, after being put in prison for life in federal pen in Atlanta. And he did Laws of Living, and he really saw what Dan was doing. And, like, he woke up as love. And there was actually a contract put out on Dan, and this guy protected him and saved his life, or he'd have been killed in the prison. The guy who confessed that he just liked to murder people. I mean, literally, that's what put him in the penitentiary in the first place. And as I say, he committed several other murders in the years that he was in there. And I guess, you know, kind of if you're in there for life, what can they do to you? Give you a life sentence? I don't know. But anyway, he became Dan's protector. He stood between he and more than one person who was trying to execute a contract on Dan and kill him. What's possible? The truth is, each and every one of us is the substance and the presence of love if we wake up to who we are. And each one of us that chooses that, by choosing it, wakes up, resonates, sets up an energy field that at least begins the awakening process for love in others, for the truth of who they are. And in the process, you simply throw off everything to do with hate and fear and pain inflicted and abuse and degradation and sexual assault and whatever's happened. You literally begin to remove those energetic patterns. You begin to forgive those patterns that are so deeply physiologically ingrained, because in an individual's bloodline that experiences that kind of assault, it's been going on most likely for generations. Remember that story in the scriptures about the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years. Do you really think that a group of people who understood astronomy as they did could possibly be lost in a 35 square mile area for 40 years? Hello? Now, that's a nice literal story to talk about. But, you know, I mean, they wrote about astronomy pretty brilliantly, so they knew the sun came up in the east and set in the west, and they knew that if they were, quote-unquote, lost, well, you got a max of about 35 miles to travel to get out of the desert. You get up in the morning, you follow the sun. You get up the next morning, you follow the sun, and you follow the sun, and you follow the sun. How long can you be lost going in a straight line for 35 miles? It's a code word for the unconscious. It wasn't about a hot, sandy place. It was people who live their lives in the unconsciousness of who they are and live out of the unconscious. And that word desert is a code word for the unconscious. Lost in the family dynamics, the power person dynamics of 1,000 generations of insanity. If you read that passage, you'll see that moving from the desert to the promised land, one thing had occurred. Do you remember what it was? They said the old generation had to die off. That didn't mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. The root of the word generation is genari. It means cause. All of the causes held, yes, right down into your genes that would present when resonated something based in hostility or fear. And if it came up and grabbed you by the face and sucked you in and you were doing its behavior and you just said, well, I didn't want to do it, but I couldn't help myself. The urge was just so overwhelming. That urge comes from the desert, comes from the unconscious. There's a thing in the mind called the automatic decision system. It's an important part of our course on Laws of Living to understand that. And forgiveness cracks the automatic decision system. Forgiveness opens the personal code and allows us to remove, forgive information that doesn't belong. And the word forgive means remove. It doesn't mean let somebody else off the hook. As you remove that insanity, then you're restored to the presence of love. You're now out of the desert. Where do you live now? Promised land. What's the promised land? It's the land of conscious co-creation. We consciously know who we are, and we consciously creating life out of love. living in the desert, the unconscious, a sort of hell. We live in unconscious co-creation. Oh, we're still creators, but we have no idea that we're responsible for our why is this happening to me again experience. Certainly, it must be someone else's fault, and you're here, so it must be your fault. Thus, the unconscious cycle of denial, dissociation, projection, externalization happens, and people become lost in the desert of their own generational patterns. They're unconscious. You remember in the scriptures that said, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. Now, that wasn't a sexist comment, fathers. But it was that which sources your thinking. It could be fathers and mothers through the generations. Look to those lives, clean up, forgive what's in you from there. You remember Yeshua was talking to one particular group of people, and he says, your father is a liar. He is the king of liars. There is no truth in him. Guess what he was talking about? He was talking about perception based in hostility or fear. When your mind is locked into any form of hostility or fear, something from the generations has taken over, and it'll run your life. And you're not designed to be run by that. You're designed to experience yourself as the truth of who you are. And the mind shifter tool is designed to resonate those things that we've dissociated from, that we've locked away in the lockbox of the unconscious. And therefore, whenever it steps in and functions, it functions unconsciously. We don't even know what's going on. Somebody says, well, did you hear what you just said? And people say, well, I didn't say that. Excuse me, there were 10 of us, all 10. What did he just say? He said that. No, I didn't say that. Unconscious, triggered words right out of the mouth. And people swear, I never said those words. Oh, excuse me, we've got a recording here. Oh, yeah, but, well, yeah, I heard the recording, but I didn't say it. Like, excuse me? That's how the unconscious works. Forgiveness is a way to clean up the unconscious. Mind shifter is a tool for getting those things that are hidden away, that we've subverted so deeply that we don't see them, getting to resonate again. So through resonance, they're strengthened and come, they fire off in the mind at a level where we can become conscious of them again. And that's why you split the page and you write whatever comes up from the mind shifter on the right-hand side of the page, because then you can go back and work through it. You can go back and look and go, oh, my God, I didn't realize I had that. I remember the early days of writing mind shifters, and I go back to one after having written. It's like, where did this come from? I don't remember writing a word of this. Oh, my God, that's in my mind? Yeah, that's it. It's called the desert. It's called the unconscious. Most people live there at least the first 40 years of their lives. That's why I was, if you're with us today, Mike, that's why I was excited about your call yesterday, that at 25, you're ready for this and rock it and see the truth of it. And we're here to support you 2,000%. And then the still point breathing process, the use of the breath, is the key way to opening the unconscious. You know, when they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain, they weren't talking about a purple curtain in a church. The veil of the temple is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. Remember when you've seen me draw on the board and I draw a stick man, and then I draw a dotted line, and then I draw in the head, and then below that I draw a line, and there's just one little opening in it? That's the veil. That's the barrier of the temple. The barrier between the conscious and the subconscious mind are, it's a fenestrated barrier, but the conscious and subconscious are continuously exchanging places all the time. Rarely does what's in the unconscious pick up. That's why when I draw it, I draw it just one little opening. Rarely do people consciously, purposely get in touch with what's going on in their unconscious. And that veil, that barrier, they said, had to be torn in two. Again, it's not a purple curtain in a church. That veil between the subconscious and the unconscious is built by holding the breath. And it's broken down by using the still point breath. That's what the still point breath is designed to do. Open the veil and give you contact with what's in the unconscious. And as that vitalization takes place, as you, you know, step into communion, you touch the hem of the garment of everybody in the community, and everybody's vitalized, everybody has an easier time opening that veil and staying conscious and moving through those things that need to be removed. And then you get to taste yourself as love. You get to experience yourself as who you are. And everything shifts. Until the next time an unconscious dynamic comes into play. And then you'll get your next forgiveness opportunity. And your next, and your next, and your next. And if you're the early adopter, if you're one who's grabbed hold of these tools, and you can't look back and say mom or dad or sister or brother or aunt or uncle or cousin or woman. You can't think of anybody else who's even could even think about entertaining the conversation. Being the early adopter, you've taken on a big chunk to bite, a big chunk to chew. And we're here to assist you in developing your masseter muscle. The masseter is the one there that controls your jaw. That big muscle when you clench your jaw, you know, the one where a lot of people use to hold back and shut down and keep the unconscious closed when they clench their jaws. We're here to soften and open that, breathe through it, and the breath opens the veil. And if you're lucky in the process, you move into still point, and then still point is the place where you've opened that veil and you move energy in high speed, fast forward, removing what never belonged in you or in your bloodline, in your generations. You know, the Native Americans were brilliant. They understood healing. Whenever the Native Americans, you know, you've perhaps heard it, if you've gone into a sweat lodge with them or into a healing ceremony, they'll use the words metaquiasin. It means for all my relations. Doing this just for me. We're doing this for all our relations. And who are all of our relations? Well, Einstein says this: if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you are living in an optical delusion. The truth is, there's only one of us. We are cells in what the ancients called the mystical body of Christ. The mind of love designed to function, and that's the mind that was called the mind of Christ. Remember Paul talked about the mind of Christ in you? That mind designed to function through your physiology opens and changes everything. It's not a religious journey. Christ has nothing to do with religion. The word Christ there, that mind of Christ, is the mind of love in you. Literally, you are, and you have as your birthright, the right and the capacity to live out of the mind of love. That's all. Because it's what you are. So I breathe with you if that resonates anything for you, whatever's moving, that you breathe fully and freely, opening, you know, whatever's resonating at this moment, opening the veil of your temple and moving deeper and deeper into the state that we are each designed to live in. I'm just going to invite you to take a couple of deep breaths with me. I know Jeannie sometimes says I sound like Darth Vader on the other end, but one of the things I do, especially when I'm working with people, especially if something touches or moves something in me, is I breathe. So if I sound like Darth, it's really about me just opening my veil. So I breathe with you, invite you to breathe with me. Allow yourself to close your eyes and look inside and see the presence of love that is there. Experience the truth about who you are. And if you look with your inner eye, it may show up as a light, literally in each cell. And as you breathe, look at the light in each cell as it expands and reaches out beyond its own borders, the cellular borders, to the other cells that seem to be separate but are really part of one body. And when you realize there are trillions of cells that make up what you call your body, there's obviously just one you, but there are trillions of individuated components. In the same way, there are, they're telling us now, about 8 billion people on the planet, each seemingly separate, but not separate, only individuated. And so see that light expanding out from each cell. And as it touches the light from the cell nearest it, watch that joining and that expanding of that light. Notice where there are any blocks in your breathing, if there are any, and let yourself breathe into that. Your physiology is a device designed to incarnate conscious, active, present love. If your generations are filled with rage and guilt and grief and murder and abuse and hostility and rage and criticism and condemnation and fear and victimhood and gossip and slander, guess what you're going to need to do to function out of that love? You're going to need to work through and apply forgiveness to what's stored in your physiology. You have to work through what came from the lives of the fathers. This is not always a pleasant work to do, but it's a necessary work. We're here to support you, assist you in understanding and applying the tools of forgiveness. Tools of the mind shifter, still point breathing, the commitment, the power person worksheet, the responsibility communication tool, each and every one of them. We hold a space of appreciation for each of you. Well, then let's just continue our meditation and our breath.
Yeah.
And just everybody, if you would, just take a breath. Stay with that energy and watch that light. And with your inner eye, watch that light in each cell expanding till it touches the light, spills over the borders of each cell into contact, into connection with the other light energy moving in each cell. And as the trillions of cells that make up your structure, the light expands in them and joins that light, exudes from your whole, what you call your body. It moves out, and remember, there's nothing in the so-called physical world that can stop that penetratingly powerful presence of love. So if there's someone in your life that needs some support right now, they may be in the same room, they may be on the other side of the planet. It may be someone unknown. I invite you to breathe and hold to that active present love with and for them. The truth about you is that you are blessed, and you are the actual created essence of the Creator's love, designed to come in and inhabit this world consciously as love and bring those results into your world. And in so doing, you'll be empowered to create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Please, go give it away.
So thank you for joining us today. And this is the last day of the year. And today is Friday, December 31st, 2021. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581 and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Dr. Tim's done the Course in Miracles every day this year, and the one for all this week, it's the same one for every day this week. This holy instance would I give to you, be you in charge, for I would follow you, certain that your direction gives me peace. And I've looked up each day from a different source, the description or whatever of the holy instant. And this one says, it is a moment in which we temporarily set aside the past and enter into the timeless present in which we momentarily transcend identification with illusions and recognize what is real. We enter the holy instant not by making ourselves holy, but by forgetting our normal frame of reference with its absorption in the past, the future, the body, and our own sinfulness. This allows our minds to be still and shift into another state of mind. There we experience the lifting of the barriers of space and time, unawareness of the body, the sudden feeling of peace, joy, and love, recognition of our true holiness and communion with all that seemed to lay outside of us, with all our brothers and with God. In this instant, we may be bumped ahead years in our spiritual development because we experience the end point of development. After this instant, we will go forth in time carrying a permanent, quiet center of timelessness. Our goal is to eventually make this every situation, to eventually make every situation a holy instant so that our lives become a permanent holy instant. At that point, we will go beyond time into the endless instant of eternity. And it's a practice. It's every day, sometimes 50 times in a minute. So we practice towards that holy instant. Welcome, Michael.
Perfect. Perfect reading. That's right in line with where I wanted to head with today's show. So thank you for that, sweetie. And when you realize the truth of what Jeannie just said, then you really get to bring your mind into harmony with the truth. You know, Albert Einstein had an interesting observation. He says, the theory you have about a thing determines what you can observe. The theory you have about a thing determines what you can observe. If your theories are off, then obviously what you observe, your perceptual construct, is going to be out of alignment. And the fact is, we've been fed many lies, and holding lies as theories literally distorts the output of our minds, leaves us where we can't observe the truth. So what I'd like to do with today's show, seeing as how we're the last show of the year, I'd like to just offer an outline of the truth about how the world works. And my offering would be that the closer we bring, my experience has been that the closer I can bring my mind into alignment with this as the truth, the closer I observe my mind is able to serve up to me constructs, perceptual constructs, that are based in truth, that are accurate. So if you correct the mind and the theories that it holds, you'll end up with corrected perception. Now, recognize that perception is just a construct of the mind. And being a construct of the mind, in order to create that construct, the mind has to have the content that is at the root of the picture it's going to show you. Remember that if it has that content already, then whatever it is, it's already passed. In order for your mind to have content, the content has to be from the past. And so the perceptual constructs your mind is going to show you are all going to be from the past. They're going to replicate what the mind holds. The thing is that if you can get to what Jeannie was reading about the holy instant, if you can get to the moment where love is present and perception is based on the presence of love rather than on the past, all of a sudden you get to experience a perceptual system that is free of errors. And that becomes the jump-off point for entering into literally the present. And the reason they call it the present is because whenever you're there, you are the presence and you are in touch with the presence of love. And you get to actually move into a true present moment experience rather than something replicated by the mind from the past. So your so-called body is a cosmic soup of neuropeptides. Lab research now shows that those are reflections of condensed thoughts. When you think a thought, a neuropeptide, quote-unquote, appears in your, quote-unquote, body. Now, remember, body is theory. What we call a body is a picture in a mind. What the actuality of the thing is that your perception doesn't show you is that it is an energy system. When you start to understand it from the perspective of energy and you let go of all the theories based on material substance, you get to enter a whole new world of perception. So what they've shown in the cell biologist laboratory is that when you think a thought, literally a neuropeptide appears in your structure. That neuropeptide circulates around in your structure. Each of them is a protein, a unique structure, and it's a reflection of and built according to the blueprint created by our thoughts. Each neuropeptide is designed to carry the message it contains to the cell, and it directs the cell's function accordingly. So you think a thought, that thought circulates around in your structure till it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. It lands on the receptor site and inserts itself in the cell. And if you were looking from inside of the cell, that neuropeptide that's just inserted itself will look like what we call chemistry in the cell. And this is a mechanism by which individual cells, which have no other apparent means of contact with the outside world, are informed about the world or informed about your perception of the world, accurate or inaccurate. Inaccurate perceptions tell your cellular structure, like let's say, for instance, we have perception based in fear. If the fear filter is active, then the mind will continuously create perceptual constructs that show us something threatening in our environment. So if fear is activated, the mind produces perceptions of threat. If the cells are communicated continuously a message that says threat, 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 the cell's function is compromised. It moves from full creative function to protective defensive function. And it compromises the higher abilities of the cell. Now, each neuropeptide is a direct reflection of the quality of our thoughts, and each communicates and inserts an energy, a message into our cells. The message is received by the cell directly impact every activity of that cell, including the changing of the action of and the rewriting of our genes. Now, this mechanism of cellular communication was originally designed to inform the cell about the actual world. Unfortunately, a relatively new skill, perception, made up by us, interrupts the process of informing the cell about the actuality and inserts in the place of that information about actuality an artificial construct, a made-up world that is nothing but a projection of unresolved past experiences. Those experiences held in body memory are constructed using past thoughts from those memories. So now what we have is a cell, instead of awareness based on truth and love being the root of perception, most perceptions are formed from content acquired from the past based in fear and hostility. These perceptual constructs of the mind appear to be current, present moment experiences to the mind, which can't tell the difference between an accurate or an hallucinated reality. Fear and hostility are markers that indicate current perception is being formed from the past and therefore does not represent truth. Fear and hostility tell you that your perceptual constructs are being made from the past and do not represent truth. But your cells don't know that. Your cells respond as though what's being communicated by those neuropeptides is true. So we have the potential for actuality to be an energy that comes into our experience, and we directly get fed, nurtured, and come to an experience of that actuality. But if we insert this thing called perception and the perception is false, then the cellular structure is continuously working from a false precept. A thought from the past massaged into appearing as a present moment experience is always a lie. It's just an appearance. You might remember the warning that Yeshua gave, do not judge by appearances. When these constructs get between us and our loved ones and our lives, the result can be devastating. Or, with tools, these experiences can be the opportunity for monumental healing and transformation. What we're looking to do with this work is to bring transformation continuously, possibility. Literally, the corrected perception is the opportunity to do generations of inherited trauma healing. And we're looking to create those opportunities continuously. To build an understanding of the dynamic process of constructive perception, I suggest that you go to your internet and type in www.cia.gov, and there you'll find a book. Do a search, and you'll find a book where the CIA did some research on intelligence. So www.cia.gov. and look for their book on intelligence. There's a chapter on perception in that book. And I'm going to quote word for word what the CIA said. Now, you might find it interesting that the CIA is teaching the Course in Miracles, precisely in alignment with what the Course teaches. So here's word for word what their research says. Perception is a demonstrably active rather than passive process. It constructs rather than records reality. People continuously construct their own version of reality. Now, I would shift that language a little bit to be in alignment with this work, and that is that people construct their own version of reality And they think that their reality is actuality. So we have actuality, what's actually occurring in the world. And then we have the mind's construct, and the mind will try to convince us that a construct, its construct is the actuality of the world, but it's not. It's just the mind's reality. So you can go to the Study of Intelligence. Look for a book entitled The Study of Intelligence on the CIA website. Now, my offering is that life abhors us holding on to and hiding from ourselves the dis-ease energies, and life is designed to bring us someone who can resonate, someone who can show us these dis-ease energies directly. So whatever we hold on to in the way of false perception, remember Einstein's thing, the theory you have about a thing determines what you can observe. So if you have a theory, let's say you've been through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, and you have a theory that everybody else is the problem in your life, then your mind will construct a perceptual reality that says, you're the problem in my life. Now, sooner or later, I'm going to have to come to the point where I go, I've been through this one 87 different times with 42 different people. Maybe this is about me. If I don't do that, here's what happens. The theory I have about a thing is an energy that I hold in my mind, and I continuously send that energetic pattern out into the world. And because the world operates by resonance, and resonance creates motion toward, somebody's going to show up to play my theory out with me. So someone who can resonate, someone who can show us the dis-ease energies directly, the ones that we hold and pretend don't belong to us but belong to everybody else, that we're going to draw somebody in to resonate those energies directly. When we blame them for what we're feeling, we're engaging in a theory. You made me, and now I'm limited as to what I can observe. What we're unknowingly doing to ourselves with our minds use those energies moving in us, and the energies might be resonated by another, but we use those energetic patterns to build the world of perception, the picture world that we see. It is we who convert those energies into images, false pictures directed by our errant minds. And they, the picture or mind of someone else, falsely shows up inside of us with our problem attached. Now, the way to tell that this is true is to notice that you're the one that's feeling what's moving in you. You can say to somebody, you made me mad, but you're the one who's feeling the mad because that energy is moving in you. Now, the process of forming unconscious perceptions leaves us believing the fallacy that as we look at the pictures or projections generated by our brains, our self-generated constructs, that our eyes are actually showing us something outside of ourselves. Codependence is the belief that someone or something else is responsible for what you're doing to yourself with your own mind. Let's do that again. Codependence is the belief that someone or something else is responsible for what you are doing to yourself with your own mind. And nothing could be further from the truth that the belief that others cause you to feel, that others are responsible for the energy that's moving in you. Nothing could be further from the truth than that belief. But this errant conclusion leaves us stuck in the belief that our why is this happening to me again experiences are forced on us from the outside, when the truth is that the world of pain perception is a totally internal, self-generated, self-imposed world. This self-imposed world that seems to be impossible to escape is usually based on generations of errant theories and perceptions. Generations of unresolved pain lead us to errant conclusions. So recognize that if there's something, an energetic pattern in you that is unresolved and is signaling pain, then that unresolved pain, if you live in denial, will, again, the theory you have about a thing, if the theory is they made me mad, they made me sad, they made me afraid, then it's going to lead me to errant conclusions. Now, my offering is there is one and only one escape from that situation. It was taught 2,000 years ago. And we need to look differently, take a different perspective than the one that is taught by the world of blame. The only escape I would offer from the mind continuing to generate its errant perception, its errant conclusions, is to be able to collapse those conclusions. You must learn to collapse the errant perception of your mind. And the tool for doing that is called forgiveness. Forgiveness is a technology that was given to us 2,000 years ago in the ancient Aramaic language. So the world of blame says it's all your fault. If that's the theory I have about a thing, my mind will continuously generate perceptual constructs that show me somebody else is at fault. And anybody will do. Your worst enemy or your dearest friend. If there's nobody else available, the mind will turn its viciousness on whoever's handy. When we feel pain without being touched, that pain I'd offer is often a generational experience that's up for healing. And as you free yourself from the capacity to generate any kind of internal pain, you'll be opening the space to free your generations and quite literally all the world. There's a great line in the Course in Miracles. It says, millions yet unborn will benefit from the work you do. For each person willing to go to this level of healing, we're here. We hold in the deepest way possible the space for you to come out the other side of this experience with a whole new level of serenity, a new level of aliveness that's beyond the understanding of the world. Quite literally, the serenity that passes all understanding. We've just done a brief synopsis of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Unfortunately, we can't sell you a new copy if we wanted to because it's out of print. However, you can go to your to Amazon or eBay, other places too, but those two always have multiple copies of the book available, used copies that are fairly inexpensive. Or you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and you can download the book free in English or German or Spanish or Farsi or I don't know what all the languages are, but there are many there. Download the book free. So the mechanism underlying the process of generating perception is one where these neuropeptides, which are nothing but energetic patterns created by thoughts, circulate and find cells to which they have an affinity and attach to that cell's receptor site. landing on those cells, they insert themselves and appear, as I said earlier, inside the cell as chemistry. These information carriers are designed to inform the cell about actuality, the actual world, or communicate about internal conditions and needs. Sadly, this process has, for the most part, been compromised by errant perception. Much of this cellular communication process has become a rehash of unresolved associated traumas from the past, often arising from generational patterns out of the genes. The reflections of these unconscious processes appear to be the present in the mind. Now, I suspect that understanding this particular set of thoughts is what led Henry David Thoreau in 1854 to write the words, which we quote in the opening of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. What is called resignation is confirmed desperation. From the desperate city, one goes into the desperate country. And have to console themselves with the bravery of muskrats and minks. In other words, kill for something in order to feel the thrill. He goes on to say, a stereotyped but unconscious despair is concealed even under what are called the games and amusements of mankind. But it is a characteristic of wisdom not to do desperate things. One of the things that you'll find as you really truly engage your forgiveness work is you'll stop compulsively doing desperate things. Stop doing desperate things. In other words, when that crunch of hostility or fear comes up of those energetic patterns and restore your mind to love before you take action. So in that last line where he says it is a characteristic of wisdom not to do desperate things, what Thoreau is giving us is a clue to his comprehension of what it is to experience actuality directly, a state that, by and large, today is undescribable. We have no words for what is not in common experience. And if you just look around at what's going on in the world, you'll see the desperation. It looks like rage. It looks like vengeance. It looks like violent words, violent actions, violent thoughts. You can sit quietly in the midst of the turmoil of the cognitive mind, the holy instant. If there is any turmoil, you will feel the underlying current of love and serenity that's just below the surface mind's disturbances. When you can do that, you're approaching the possible human life. If not, your untoward projections will ultimately destroy you unless they're removed. Nothing else can destroy you but the energetic patterns that are of a disintegrative nature should you choose to engage in them. In the first century Aramaic language, removal of these untoward projections was called forgiveness. Thoughts based in love produce neuropeptides that communicate information that support its target cell's aliveness and well-being with integrative, supportive chemistry, quote-unquote, and we could substitute the word information. So remember that the cell has no other apparent means of knowing what's going on in the environment in a human form, you know, we've got a community of trillions of cells. The only way that those cells get to know what's going on around it and what to do, and thoughts based in love produce literal energetic structures called neuropeptides that communicate information and support the aliveness and well-being of those cells. Thoughts based in hate, anger, and fear and loss. Now, your mind may say, well, yeah, but this is all justified. Well, that's one theory. And if you hold that theory, then the theory you have about the thing will determine how you perceive it, and you'll go right on doing it. But once you realize that thoughts based in anger, hatred, fear, and loss are internal, and when they insert themselves into a cell, they show up as chemistry, as information that destroys the cell. And this is the root of all disease and feelings of pain. Shy of someone punching you in the nose, there is no pain that can be inflicted upon you by the world. Any circumstance, situation that can happen cannot inflict pain on you. But if you're in pain, again, short of being punched in the nose, it's because there's some form of hostility or fear moving in you. My offering is that a healthy cell cannot be attacked by any organism. Each thought, when stored in the cell, either supports the life of the cell or the destruction of the cell. There's integrative and there's disintegrative energy. Where disintegrative energy is placed, there's going to be a warning signal. The cell, when that disintegrative energy hits the neuropeptide, the receptor site, when the neuropeptide hits the receptor site, the cell is going to say, ouch, in some way, shape, or form. But if we live in a world where our theory is, remember the theory you have about a thing determines what you can observe. If we live in a world that our theory is somebody else is to blame here, then my mind will always structure a construct showing me a picture of somebody else being to blame, and I'll insert that picture in place of the truth, and my cells will get a wrong picture, an errant understanding of what's going on. We are warned by feelings of pain and turmoil that we have a thought disorder. We're not warned that somebody else is the problem in our life. When we engage in thoughts that create the chemistry of destruction, pain is the warning that those thoughts do not belong in our structures. Thoughts compressed into a neuropeptide, when they land on a cell, create a sensation in the cell that we call feelings. And these feelings inform the cell and us the quality of our thoughts and our creative process. Probably one of the greatest atrocities that's ever been done to humankind down through the ages and that we've bought into is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. When we have that hidden from us, then we can believe that everybody else is the problem in our lives. We need to reclaim our creatorship and realize who we are. Most people, when experiencing pain, deny responsibility by blaming others for what they are energetically doing to themselves with the hidden parts of their own minds. We literally dissociate from and hide the dynamic of destruction that is self-induced when we live in the world of denial. Remember our definition of denial. When I think or speak as though someone outside of me is the cause of what's happening inside of me, I'm in denial. When I'm in denial, I dissociate from the truth of the energetic dynamics within me. When I dissociate from the truth of the energetic dynamics within me, I'm in deep trouble. because those energetic dynamics go on unchecked. If they go on unchecked and they're of a disintegrative nature, then the disease process runs rampant. And I'll believe that I've got some form of physical disease. Now, most find a way to self-medicate, to drug themselves to cover up the disintegrative energy they're engaged in. Why do you suppose somebody who pulls out a fifth of scotch and drinks themselves into a stupor and the next morning is in such pain and such trauma and such stupidity they can hardly stand themselves and they need another bite of the dog that bit them? Why do you suppose people do that? My offering is that they're trying to cover the disintegrative energies that they've put into their own structures, and they're trying to hide the resultant pain from themselves. And I'm offering that everything from junk food to prescription drugs can be used to anesthetize and destroy awareness of the truth. Pain is designed to shake us back to awareness. Its purpose is to make our ears grow. Now, let's go back and repeat Einstein's thought. The theory you have about a thing determines what you can observe. These principles are there to describe the only cause of disease in the human body. Bacteria and viruses do not cause diseases. Remember, it was called the germ theory. We have to assault tissue repeatedly in order for it to begin to decay and become physical, what we call physical disease. Now, the organisms that we blame, they're called reducer organisms. They reduce the presence of dead, decaying, disintegrating material. That's what they're designed to do. They're designed to clean up the mess. So the disintegrating cells become a toxin. And so the reducer organisms are designed to digest them, to get rid of them. So these reducer organisms, the things we call the bacteria, the virus, are designed to have an affinity for dying cells and assist, like the lion in the jungle, in calling out the diseased cells. Our offering here is that all disease is self-imposed. Now, somebody might say, well, Michael, that sounds like a big stretch. I don't know if I want to go there. What if you're wrong? Well, here's my offering. If I'm right and you realize that all disease is self-imposed, then you'll be motivated to heal yourself. If I'm in error, then you'll be motivated to heal yourself. There's no cost. You remember that the ancients counseled take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. Now, that word heart, in our modern updated language, would be the unconscious. A particular ancient teacher, a master physiologist, psychologist, geneticist, neurobiologist, Yeshua, also known as Jesus, 2,000 years ago said, you must forgive from your heart your unconscious, the wrongs of your brother. Our perceptions, our realities, are an internal construct, often with little resemblance to and a little to do with the outer world of actuality. Our eyes do not see outside of us. They're not windows on the world. The pictures they show us are an artificially created construct. Remember the CIA? The mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality. This artificially generated world is nothing but a reflection of an unresolved past, but tricks us into thinking that the world we think we see is actually out there instead of in here. These constructs are our own private realities that may or may not represent the actuality that is occurring. But here's what you can be assured of. It'll always tell you precisely the state of your own mind. The perceptual constructs of your mind will always tell you precisely the state of your mind. Now, what is this heart that Yeshua speaks of in Aramaic? My offering is, it is the unconscious. Out of the hidden parts of the mind flow the energies that control our lives, ease or pain, our joy or depression, our aliveness or our death. Yeshua in Aramaic never said to forgive your brothers. That would be a huge mistake. Pardon, if you will, let somebody else off the hook, but reserve forgiveness for the one place that it belongs, and that is inside of you. So what Yeshua is telling us is that what we feel when we blame another is something that we're hiding from ourselves. And this is accomplished through the act of denial. When I speak or think as though something inside of me is caused by something outside of me, I'm in denial. And in order to make that belief logical, I have to hide the part of my mind that's creating the disturbance. By so doing, I create a hidden compartment in my mind. That compartment is called the unconscious mind or the heart in the ancient scriptures. And by definition, if I have an unconscious, I have no direct access to it. Many people say, well, if that was going on inside of me, I'd know it. No, that's why it's called the unconscious. Through repeated denial, I strongly energize the hidden content that I don't want to deal with. That strongly energized content reflects as my creative process, and at some point is going to rise up, much to my regret, and directly control me. My denial causes all of the unpleasant sensations I feel in my body. It intensifies pain. How do I tell whether or not what I'm feeling is mine or not? Well, we've developed a test. Are you feeling it? If you're feeling it, then you know that it's yours. Now, you can say, you made me angry, afraid, or sad, but that's an absolute impossibility. That's a lie I tell myself. I'm feeling the movement of impacted, unpleasant energies that I've hidden from myself through denial. And I've hidden them from myself by blaming someone else. All I have to do is say, you made me mad, and the root of the mad part of my mind is now unconscious. It's no longer mine to correct. Now, when a whole society buys into this blatant error, it counsels you to forgive others. It counsels you in an impossibility. Oh, just let them off the hook. But our offering is never forgive another, yourself, or anyone. Bad idea. Pardon them, let them off the hook if you wish. But once again, apply forgiveness to the only place it belongs, and that's inside yourself. In Aramaic, the word forgive describes a tool with which you uncover and heal the dissociated parts of self, the root of all pain. A true understanding of forgiveness is to remove or to evict from your unconscious the past, that part of you with which you make up the lie that your brother is the problem in your life. Those who resonate our hurt are never the cause of our hurt. We've been taught to blame anyone, ourselves, and even the ones we cherish most. Any object of attention will do when in denial. Yeshua had a specific how-to technology for giving, for accessing and removing disintegrative thoughts. Decompressing, decoding, and removing actual neuropeptides that distort cellular function that do not belong in the human mind is the true meaning of forgiveness. The Greeks did not have a clue. They turned forgiveness backward. They made it about letting others off the hook going on inside our own hearts, the sole source of our own issues. So the Greek interpretation of forgiveness is, you are the cause of my pain. This is all your fault, but it's okay. I'll be big about it. I'll forgive you. Our offering is, that is pardoning. Whenever you're in fear or hostility, how do you get back to love? My offering is by accessing and removing the root thoughts that cause the fear or hostility. In the first century, in the Aramaic language, a tool for accomplishing that purpose was taught, and it was forgiveness. When properly understood and used, its activity accesses and removes the generational impact of hostility and fear. Angry minds in denial, minds that don't want to own anything or be responsible for anything going on in their lives, have universally made forgiveness about letting others off the hook for their own internal conditions. And that, I'd offer, is insanity. Never forgive anyone for anything. Use forgiveness to see, access, and remove internally generated disturbances, the only ones that you can feel, and be restored to love, your birthright. And Jeannie just came in and told me that we have a hand up. So if we've got a hand up, I'm going to just let this sit right where it is and recognize that we're looking to access the technology that restores us to our birthright, which is to experience ourselves and those around us as active present love. My offering is, that's what we're designed to live out of, is that true active presence of love. And that's what we're here to share with you. And so, Miss Jeannie, you've got somebody.
And it's a really long number, but I believe that it's Miss Carrie. Welcome.
Hi there. It is.
Well, welcome,
right.
Young lady.
Yeah. We couldn't hop on right at the beginning, but the last part we heard is so good. Thank you for always sharing these thoughts. They're just amazing, and the way you put them together is fabulous. And I had an experience the other day that I think it kind of fits right into this that I wanted to
share.
Cool.
Tell us about it.
Well, I'll see if I can make it quick, but we originally got this washing machine that we thought, we live in Mexico, so we thought we'd get this really simple washing machine, but it turned out to be way too simple. And it would just drain the water. It didn't spin and didn't even drain all the water. And we've got to get a washing machine that does a little more of the work for us. And because my husband speaks
right.
Very good Spanish, and you talk to the different people in the system, and they said, yeah, bring it, and you can exchange it at this store. And so we went to get the washing machine, and it turned out a lady who worked at our hardware store in our little village also was there, and she was picking up a trampoline for her kids, and we had borrowed a neighbor's truck to do it, and we offered to give her a ride home because her trampoline wouldn't fit in a taxi. So she and my husband were waiting at the truck for the different appliances to come out, and I went to go get something in the grocery store. And as I started walking that direction, I took my mask off, which I had on in the store, and I thought to myself, everybody needs to take these masks off. And which, of course, I knew as soon as I thought it wasn't coming from pure alignment with love. And the second that I had that thought, I tripped over the edge of the sidewalk. And I've kind of learned if I trip to just let myself fall so I don't hurt myself worse. Because it's usually my soul picking me up and dropping me and saying, hey, pay attention. So as I'm falling to the sidewalk, I bumped my knee, but not too bad, and came up behind me this mama and two kids. Huh? You felt that bump?
When you said that, I had this flash of energy go through my right knee.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was just saying that when you said those words, I had this flash of energy fly through my right knee.
Yeah, it was, for me it was my left knee. But I landed And as I landed in this puddle, like the second I hit bottom, this Spanish lady, Mexican lady, and her two kids came up behind me, and she was rattling away in Spanish. I don't even know everything she said. She grabbed one arm, and a man came up from a crowd of people walking by who wasn't even connected with her, picked me up by the other arm, and just like two angels, they just picked me right up off the ground. And then the man just kept walking. I looked to see who was that, and here's a group of people walking that direction, and I couldn't even tell who it was who had picked me up. And the lady and her kids walked on, and I was like, wow. It's that, I think, being really present with ourselves when we know that, you know, our old data is kind of vibrationally present, and we are in it, and then we get sort of, I mean, I find that I get sort of clunked, you know, one way or another. Something says, hey, pay attention. You're not 100% in love. And then I can breathe and I can release and let go, you know, but it's just having that hyper awareness all the time. So
when I'm not in love, I go down. When I'm in love, I get let go.
Yeah, did you hear that? Say that again, babe. My husband just said.
Hi, this is Marek. When you're out of love, you go down. And when you're in love, you are lifted up. And it was just that fast. She was out of love.
Absolutely.
She went down. And as she was going down, she realized, I know why this is. And barely touching the ground, it was like a bounce. And there were people there, like angels.
Support was there.
Her up.
Yeah. Awesome.
It was beautiful. It was really cool.
You trigger, Carrie, with that story and what you had just said, you trigger a memory for me. Back about 20 years ago, we had a man who arrived at Heartland who was former military, and they were getting ready to put him in isolation in a mental institution, and he probably would have been there for the rest of his life. And it turned out he went to report to the VA, and the VA didn't have a bed for him, and he went into a rage. That was his PTS kicking in. I don't think there's a D on the end of PTS. The D, it's not a disorder. It's just the way the mind adapts. But he went into a rage, and he decided he was going to go out into the woods, which was his thing to do, and brood. And, you know, I mean, he was loved nature. And so he lived in Kansas City, and he came down, and his sister lived about an hour from us, and she'd been helping me edit my book. So actually, this is more like 25 years ago because it was before my book was published. Anyway, he ended up coming to see me and came to Heartland and was on the support team. And about a month or so, maybe 6 weeks into his time at Heartland, he came into the kitchen from out being out in the woods, and he was like, I got it. He said, I've been in the woods forever, and I get bit by the bugs, and I get eaten by the bugs and all of that. And he said, today I went out into the woods, and for the first time, I was in love. And he said, I realized I was not in the food chain. No bites, no ticks, no jiggers. I was, when I went into love, I was not in the food chain anymore.
That's great.
And
wow.
And that, you know, that life brings support when we're connected, and it reflects and deflects support when we're not. It's a powerful lesson.
It really is. And it's so beautiful, you know, when you have your eyes open to see and your ears open to hear. And
well, another thing that strikes me in your example of, I take it, you know, when you talk about how your husband's very fluent in Spanish, and you're not that fluent, what the language you're thinking in is English, and the language had nothing to do with the energy you were radiating. The people who spoke probably only Spanish didn't hear your thought of, oh, I'm in love, but energetically, without reference to language, they got it. You know, it is literally the universal language, and they're just right there for you. And that's the core of it all.
Yeah, it was so beautiful. It was like angels, and I call angels angles of light. You know, it was like these beautiful, like this, I saw this woman's face, and she's looking concerned but rattling away in Spanish, and she just grabs my arm, and then I feel this other hands come under my other arm and just lift me up, and it was just really, really, yes. Mm-hmm. The sheer love that just went between all
Sweet.
Of us. And really, really nice, yeah.
So how do you suppose the world is going to look when we hit critical mass and 7.5 people wake up one morning realizing I am love, I'm not in the food chain?
7.5 billion, you mean? 7.5 billion,
Seven and
right?
a half billion. Yeah, all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what
we're down for that. I mean, that's why our choice of what we want to help bring into being.
I support that timeline.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm with you guys 200%.
Yep. We're here to support that timeline to help make it happen. And we feel like what we teach, what we say, what we do every single day really matters, and how we live, that we're really paying attention to where our hearts, our minds, and our spirits are aligned, that we're freeing up our old data when it comes up and being present and accounted for.
Every neuropeptide communicates a message to all the world. The neuropeptides
yes.
we form, which are just reflections of our thoughts, are really important to keep clean, to keep on track.
Yeah. Yeah.
For
yeah.
our own physiology, yeah. our own state of health and disease of this instrument, and for the impact we have in the world.
Yes. Yeah.
And to me, the
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the whole process of forgiveness is literally one of becoming conscious of and being able to literally remove those impacted thoughts, those thought disorders, the neuropeptides, from the cell and be able to throw them out. That's the act of forgiveness, being decompressing, removing, decoding those neuropeptides that have maybe been in there for 20 generations. And being able to access
right.
and remove them through the presence of love and that smile.
Yes. Beautiful.
Yay. Well, joining you
yes.
in the process, and we're down to the last minute. Love to have conversations from you, and anytime we can have you key in, please do. We appreciate you and hold the space
yes.
for you and everyone to have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. It's a gift we can each give, and the world is certainly in need of it. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.